I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Real wolves are social creatures. They need and crave a group to belong to in order to survive and thrive. The same is true for your Minnesota Timberwolves. Now join host Henry Lake as he gets an inside look with another prominent member of the club. This is Life in the Pack.
Welcome to another episode of the Life in the Pack podcast, where we talk to players, past and present, and executives with the Minnesota Timberwolves organization. I'm your host, Henry Lake, and today I get a chance to talk to my first ever favorite Minnesota Timberwolves player, who happens to be the first ever NBA draft pick for the Minnesota Timberwolves. His name is Jerome Pooh Richardson. Pooh, if you don't mind me calling you that, it's a pleasure to talk to you today on Life in the Pack.
Oh, man, I don't mind that at all. If you call me Jerome, I'll probably take it as a second take for me.
I hear you on that. Well, you know, every NBA fan, every year when it's time for the NBA draft, they get super excited for who their favorite team is going to select. And I was one of those kids, you know, knowing that my city, my state was getting a new NBA basketball team and wondering who we would select. With the 10th overall pick in the 1989 NBA draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves selected you. You were the first. Take me back to what that was like for you.
It was a great experience. You know, it was different because I was going to a new organization, which, you know, haven't had a bunch of veterans, as you would say, NBA veterans. So it's a little different. It was a little different, but it was fun because the fan participation and the players' interaction with the fans, a lot of the charitable stuff we were doing, getting into the communities, and man, the fan support was just tremendous, man. I got to say that's one of the better experiences I've ever had with basketball, just period.
I was going to ask.
It might even succeed the actual draft for
me. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you about the excitement from the jump, because I remember the night that you were drafted, I was with my father. My father took me down because he knew I was super excited and super stoked about everything. He took me down to a draft party. And I do believe, if my memory serves me correctly, that it was at the Minneapolis Convention Center. They had a draft party there. And I remember just being hyped about it. I think I still have some of the memorabilia, some of the artifacts and stuff from back in the day somewhere at my pop's house. But I know as a kid, man, just knowing that we were going to have NBA basketball here with an expansion team, that was going to be a lot of fun. But for you, you were a big-name prospect, and you have been a big-name recruit for a long time. Was there any extra pressure that you put on yourself early in your NBA career with an expansion team just because of the high profile that you brought to the league?
Oh, you know, no, not necessarily. You know, what happened was when I got drafted, I know that, you know, there was some, you know, I had a couple interviews, and I guess it was an assumption with some of them that I was more or less like overly confident. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was overly confident. Now, if you look at what's going on today, you know, with the things that I was doing back then, people get to see how things evolve. Like, for instance, I wasn't overly confident. I was just explaining to them when I got drafted, when explaining to people who was interviewing me, the media, what have you, was that since 18 years old, I spent at UCLA playing against professionals all summer long.
Yep.
I played against Magic. I played against Michael. I already played these guys. So, yes, it was a wow effect when I was 18. But by the time I was 21 and ready to graduate from UCLA, you know, I had already understood how the game goes, who does what to expect, the physicality of the game, and also the fact that it's going to be a higher level because it's not summer. Now you're playing for real. So I understood that, and I knew I could raise my level up to that. I knew that, but I think some people was reading that wrong. But when you go to a school like UCLA and the pros are at your school every day during the summer and you're playing against them, playing pickup and they teaching you things, you learning things, that gets you on a fast track if you're good enough to be on the next level with the NBA. And that's what I was actually saying and trying to explain to them. But as a youngster, they took a little wrong and like, you know, wanting to be out there. But, you know, wanted to be out there playing. Nowadays, guys don't even play. They don't. I was complaining about coming out the game. These guys don't even want to play. Want to take 3 or 4 days off.
And it can be misconstrued, too, because everybody should want somebody that's confident. You know, there's a difference between confidence and being arrogant and being cocky. So,
yes, sir.
You know, being confident is always something that you appreciate and want in individuals in life, but specifically with professional athletes. We're talking to former Minnesota Timberwolf Jerome Pooh Richardson here on the Life in the Pack podcast. And when I look back at some of the names in that draft, Pooh, Glenn Rice, Sean Elliott, Danny Ferry, Nick Anderson, Purvis Ellison, who went first overall, anybody in particular that you were good friends with leading up to the draft?
Oh, well, Purvis is a second cousin of mine.
Oh, wow.
So Purvis, me and Tim and BJ was really good friends. Me, Tim Hardaway, and BJ, we were really good friends. And me and Mookie Blaylock was cool as well. When you in that draft class and all you guys are traveling around and playing in different all-star teams and all-star games and going to different camps, you get a chance to meet all the guys and, you know, and you keep it real formal and you just figure it out. And then once everyone gets drafted, you develop relationships. And when you come to my town, I come to yours or whatever. And, you know, tell them what great places to eat or hang out and stuff like that. So as the years went on, you start developing really, really good relationships that actually carry on into your life after basketball.
You know, I had one of your teammates, Doug West, on the podcast last month.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like being a rookie with him?
It was crazy because, you know, I know Doug because we both from the – well, I'm from Philadelphia. He's from Altoona, so it's Pennsylvania. So me and Doug had a chance to play together in the what they call the Keystone Games. And we also, you know, had the same agent, which was Arn Tellem. So, man, Doug went to school at Villanova, which is in Philly. So I knew a lot of guys on his coaching staff and guys on his team. So, man, Doug was really good friends, like, since 11th grade. It was crazy because, you know, Doug was a super athletic player who had some great experiences and had some great moments with us. You know, unfortunately, I wish he would have played more as a rookie, because I know he could have really, you know, put his footprint on the team as well. Yeah.
The Philadelphia Tribune called you, quote, a basketball legend in Philadelphia. You're a McDonald's All-American. You know, Pooh Richardson represent Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. How in the heck did Walt Hazard get you to trade in the East Coast or the West Coast and attend UCLA?
Well, you know, when you make decisions to go to school, it's like, you know, hope no one gets mad at me. But is when you make decisions to go to school or get married and who you marry and who you, because you marry in that school, right?
Yep.
So, you know, you look at the different factors and what you're trying to accomplish as a player, if you want to take this to the next level. And I knew that UCLA was known for basketball and elevating guys and getting them into the professional ranks. And a lot of it had to do with the scheduling. You know, a lot of their games was on national TV. The team wasn't as good at that particular time, but they still had so many national televised games. And if you want to be a professional basketball player at that particular time, you had to go to the big schools. You had to go to the UCLAs, the Kentuckys, the you know, Duke, Carolina. You had to go to those kind of schools. And not taking anything away from, you know, the schools that was recruiting me from home, like Temple, LaSalle, and stuff like that. You go to a place like UCLA that has a heavy schedule, national schedule. Quite naturally, we have social media at the time. Mm-hmm. So you go to a school like that where you know you're going to get coverage. And all you have to do is go out there and play. And if you play and play well, you'll get an opportunity to fulfill a dream if that's your dream in basketball. You know, yeah. So I chose to go to school there. Coach Hazard, actually a guy, a Philly guy, and assistant coach Andre McCarter, actually from Philly as well. He's from South Philly, where I'm from. So it was almost like still being in Philly, but you in Los Angeles playing for guys who understand you and understand what you're trying to accomplish.
That's a bucket list for me. Like, I want to get out there for a game. Like, you hear about the pavilion and everything. I've never been. I've been to some cool places before. I've been to Cameron Indoor, and I've been down to the Dean Center in Chapel Hill and some other spots, Bloomington, Indiana. But I want to get out there, man. It seems cool.
Man, that's what it is, though. It's just cool. It's not like, you know, when you go to places, how crazy it gets. They don't get that crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that kind of craziness is instilled in them. Everybody's just laid back and cool. They cheer and get excited, just the student section. But if you look like the alumni section, they just mellow and everybody's just real cool, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to get the crazy that you might be looking for, but you'll get the cool atmosphere. That's for sure.
I just want the genuine, you know, experience. You don't have to be crazy. You don't have to be, you know, out of control, whatever that, because that ain't even my mood all the time anyway. I just want whatever it is. I just want to be a part of it. I just want to enjoy it. We're talking.
Okay, you want Showtime?
I'll take Showtime. We're talking to former Minnesota Timberwolf Jerome Pruvertson here on the Life in the Pack podcast. Pooh, how would you describe your first NBA coach, Bill Musselman?
Well, first of all, a really good coach. I mean, good coach. Man, works his tail off. Detail oriented. I thought. Very aggressive and super loyal. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the kind of guy, you know, you ever work for someone or play basketball for someone. And when you're playing for them, they just like, they always seem like they always under your skin.
Yes. Yes.
And
yes,
then,
sir.
And then when, then once you're away and you start recognizing that this guy was like, a super guy who was all detail oriented and super loyal. So making that transition and understanding him, I mean, he was a top notch coach for sure.
Yeah. So he was one of those, he was one of those individuals that was always riding you, always on you, trying to bring the best out of you. But when the game was over, you know that he had your back.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And, you know, me being I was young as well. And I was aggressive as well. So, you know, sometimes we were, you know, bump heads. And, you know, I didn't mind that.
Yeah.
He didn't mind it. And when he was in Portland one day, and we was playing the Trailblazers, and he was coaching there. And we started talking about, you know, the times we had in Minnesota. And, you know, he told me how it was a joy of coaching me. And I was like, you know, it was a joy playing for you. And a lot of times I said, being young, I didn't recognize exactly what it is that you were trying to get out of me. Whatever it was successful. And the second part of that, you know, what I always felt that guys who knew him well, that were some of the guys who played with him or against him in the CBA.
Yeah.
And they were on the team. I thought they could have helped me out a little bit to understand him a little bit more as well. But I get it. You know, they was trying to have a career themselves, having been, you know, exposed to the NBA, and they was getting their first opportunity. And I get it. I understand it.
Yeah.
But I think, me and him, you know, we understood each other, and it was really great to see him at that time. And share some moments with him and talk to him. But yeah, he was he was very, I was very fond of him. He was really a good coach.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to take you back in the day a little bit, okay? Do you remember the first team that the Timberwolves defeated for their first win in franchise history?
Of course, the 76ers.
That's right. November 10th, 1989 at the Metrodome, you beat the Philadelphia 76ers 125-118 in overtime. I mean, how about that for the kid from Philly?
Oh, man, it was bittersweet, y'all, you know. It was bittersweet, but we got one, and it was a great experience. You know, one of the goals that Coach Musselman used to set is like, let's finish every year better than the other expansion teams. Of course, you had Charlotte and Miami that was in a year before us. So we wanted to finish and had all the expansion teams in Charlotte, Miami, Orlando. You know, we wanted to finish in front of them. And so that was the goals. And we went out and we played games. We played close games, but the lack of experience. We will always, you know, fall in the fourth quarter, you know. So we had to get through that hump. And as we got better and as we had more experience, you know, we pulled out a few games.
I got to ask you this, and I didn't even have this thought earlier coming in or even in my notes or anything, but I got to ask you this. So, you know, when I look at my life in basketball and just covering and just being a kid, right, you know, clearly my favorite team is the Minnesota Timberwolves. Starting back in 1989, but clearly leading up, you know, I've been a Michael Jordan fan my entire life. But before Jordan, though, man, it was the Doc, right? It was the Doc. It was Moses and Fo, right? So you had the Philadelphia,
right,
yeah, Andrew Toney. I mean, I'd be telling people, I'd be like, man, y'all don't remember Andrew Toney? So you were right there in the mix, man. Like, was that what you were all about at the time as like a young guy kind of coming up too, just looking at those Philadelphia 76ers teams and then being one of the teams that everybody looked to in the league? Because at that time, as a kid, for me at least, in my eyes, the way that I viewed it, it was three teams. It was Philly, it was the Lakers, and it was Boston.
Right. I mean, I just caught chills just now because, you know, where I lived was actually 3 miles away from the Spectrum. Mm. And I'm there. That's South Philly. So I used to walk to the games sometimes when I was able to get into the games. And, you know, I know at that time was Dave Stern. I hope they don't get in trouble. I was sneaking in the games and not paying.
Yeah.
But
we all did. We all did back
then. Walk up to the game and sneak in the games and stuff like that. Yeah, it was Doc. I remember when Doc first came in 76. He had the knee braces. I've never seen that before. You know, all the kids used to emulate that. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have the money, so we used to take socks. So, you know, those long tube socks and cut them.
Yep.
And put holes in them and slide them on our knees like we would die. So, that experience. And as time went on, when I was in high school and started making a name for myself, I had a chance to meet Doc. You know, a guy, me, myself being from Philly and kind of making a name for myself there. I had a chance to meet Docs and Mo Cheeks and Charles, you know, so I had a chance in Moses and, you know, started really developing, you know, a decent relationship with them, but not somewhere while I'm always around them or something like that. But,
yeah,
you know, when I would see them at different camps or different functions, they would have a signing. I would come up to the signing. And you know, chat with them a little bit and talk to them and stuff like that. And then going to UCLA, you know, become really close with Magic and Worthy and those guys. And one day James had a signing in Philly. I went up to the signing and met him. We hung out a little bit, went to lunch and all that other stuff, man. So, you know, I tried to, you know, not invade people's space,
yep,
but at the same time acknowledge the fact that I do appreciate all the things that they have done for me and showed me and all the things they have taught me.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I love that. You just took me back in the day right there. But I want you to go underneath the surface here because this is something I didn't know. One of the things that I didn't know about until I did some research was the relationship that you had with the late Kobe Bryant and his father, Joe. After your NBA career, you played a year in Milan at the request of them both. Tell me about that and your relationship with Kobe.
Okay, well, it started as a, you know, like when I was young, because I used to watch Bean play, Joe.
Yep.
So I used to watch Bean, and I knew Bean's father, Big Joe. I knew Bean's brother-in-law, which is Chubby Cox, a really good player. Went to Villanova, then University of San Francisco. He played with Quentin Daly and Bill Cartwright and those guys. A lot of people didn't know that Chubby Cox, which is Pamela Cox, is his sister, which is Kobe's mom. Chubby was one hell of a player. Mm. I mean, if Kobe, the gene that he got, his dad athleticism combined with his uncle's skill and then his own skill, I could see why he was special. Because, you know, when his dad was coming out of school, his dad was very special as well. Athletic, really knew the game, you know, at 6'8", 6'9", understood it, you know, really good people, good family. So as time went on, and Kobe's a young guy, I'm hearing all these things about him and all this stuff. So he comes and he had a visit to do his agent thing when he was in high school. So he goes and he gets our agent, which is Arn Tellem, once again, another Philly guy. So Arn brings Kobe and say, you know, called me up, say, I want you to come to the office and meet and hang out with the young guy. And I said, well, who are you talking about? He said, Kobe. I said, oh, okay, I'll come down. Came out to the office, talked to Kobe a little bit. We talked. He said he was going to be staying at the hotel for a couple of days looking for a place, you know, but, you know, he was 18, you know, he's 17, 18. So I was like, all right, well, you know, let's go to the gym. So I took him to a gym, worked out with him. Young kid, super athletic, skilled, just loved to play. Just loved to play. And so Pam and Joe came out and they looked for a place and they wound up getting a place around the corner from me. So in the meantime, you know, they didn't fly in to LA yet. So for the past like week or so, he would stay a lot of time at my house and, you know, I'll just like kind of look out after him because, you know, he's a young guy in L.A., 17, 18 years old, you know, had different workouts. And, you know, of course, Jerry West really loved him. But, you know, I kind of kept an eye on him and, you know, he was at Santa Monica, Lowe's Hotel, and I would come get him and all that other stuff. Like you would do most young guys that's from your town and you know, their parents and stuff like that.
Yep.
And then when Joe and them came and they got a house around the corner from me in the Pacific Palisades area. So that went on. And then, of course, he went with Arn Tellem and we had the relationship there and always stayed in contact. We always stayed in contact with each other. And, you know, of course, I was, you know, coming to the end of my career as he was starting really to excel in his career. And when I was done, Joe called me. And Cole called me and said, you know, we buying this team in Italy. If you will come there, go there and check things out and be around for the year for that transition that we doing this team and kind of play, but kind of, you know, do some management stuff and kind of figure out who's who and who's what, what we need, what we don't.
They wanted you to be player GM.
Yeah, pretty much. So I went down there and I did that, you know, and rightfully so, you know, protecting their interests as much as possible. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, because they're not living there. They're going back and forth. Well, Joe was going back and forth. Kobe was still playing. So, you know, it was kind of looking out for things and making sure that everything was, you know, handled the correct way, the way they wanted it. And that's what happened. That's what I did.
Wow. That's an amazing story. And just to have that relationship with Kobe and his family, I'm sure that you'll never, ever forget that. You know, when I first got into doing sports media, I made my name on the AU circuit. And so, like, nice. In different places around the country, so many individuals' names mean so much. So, like, here in Minnesota, Renee Pulley and his Nike team, Howard Pulley, is big. And he's been a mentor to me. He actually took me to my first Timberwolves game years ago.
Good man.
Chicago Bulls versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. You go to Virginia, and everybody knows about Boo Williams, right? Just ask Alonzo Mourning and Allen Iverson. But when I mentioned
Boo went to St. Joe, and he spent a lot of time in Philly as well.
Oh, wow. Well, think about this. when I mention the name Sonny Hill, what comes to mind for you and for those out there that don't know the name, explain his importance to basketball in Philly.
Well, when you say Sonny Hill, he was probably the engineer or the pioneer of Boo Bamboo. And I'm sure there was a blueprint that they started the Howard Pooley program. Sonny was from a national point of view, blueprint, but it wasn't AAU.
Yep.
Let me just give you a quick synopsis of how everything went down. Now, Sonny had all his talent as young guys. You know, you can go on from me, Bo Kimble, Hank Gathers, Dallas Comedies, Gene Banks, Joe Bryan. You know, you can go on and on, you know, with all the guys, Rasheed Wallace and Aaron McKee. I mean, you can keep going on, Eddie Jones, all these guys playing in the Sonny Hill League. So theoretically, we didn't have to go outside of Philly to get the competition we needed to be better. So the games were at McGonigal Hall, where Temple used to play. Coach Chaney was always be there. Different coaches would come in and, you know, watch the games, because it wouldn't be a surprise one game you have me playing against, you know, Bo Kimble and Hank Gathers and those guys, and then watch maybe a guy like a Dallas Comedies. I don't know if people remember him. To watch a guy like a Dallas Comedies going against Nate Blackwell and guys like that, guys who really did well in college. You know, and of course, Dallas was the top pick and went to New Jersey Nets, and he was a DePaul product. But with that being said, you know, from Eddie Griffin, you know, of course, the Wolves are familiar with him.
Yep.
Eddie Griffin had a brother named Marvin Powell, was super athletic. He played as well. So, you know, I watched Rasheed Wallace. I watched Dawn Staley. I watched all these. And they had not only the men's league, they had the ladies' league. So I watched all them, and they watched me, and we all kind of know each other as like a big, huge family, but they were having sections. Like, for instance, you'll have St. Paul will have a team, maybe Bloomington will have a team, St. Louis Park will have a team. So it'd be all those teams, but they all sections of Philadelphia. And the people who live close by those sections would play for those particular teams.
Wow.
So imagine having so much talent in Philly, and you had it all broken down in age groups and that stuff, and you had that since eighth grade.
Yeah, it's just one of those deals where I feel like in all of these different cities, there's a godfather of basketball, and Sonny Hill seems to be like he was the godfather of basketball in Philadelphia. We're talking to Jerome Pooh Richardson here on the Life in the Pack podcast. Just got a couple of more questions for Pooh here. And, you know, we're just coming off the NBA All-Star Weekend. Did you see any of the NBA All-Star Weekend recently? And I got to ask you, man, what are we going to do about the slam dunk contest? Because it just ain't the same. That was hard for me to watch.
Yeah, you know, it was different because your top guys aren't participating anymore. I don't know if it's because it's truly a different wear and tear.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was watching First Take, and I was watching what they kind of proposed but didn't propose it officially, and I thought it was a great idea. I don't know if you guys heard it, but they were talking about having different cities have a guy who represent them in a slam dunk competition that's not a pro, not in the NBA.
Yeah, so it's almost kind of like you could do the I've seen some of those situations where I don't want to say like and one mixtape, but you get what I'm saying. Like you have a kind of rotating tour, so some of those type of individuals that are just dunkers.
Yeah, that they spend all their time jumping, dunking, and doing all that stuff. Where you have like maybe, let's say a guy from Philly, well, Joel Embiid would sponsor that guy. Then it'd be a guy in Brooklyn that, you know, KD was sponsor, and the guy in LA that LeBron was sponsor, or something like that. So everyone would have a guy, maybe, I don't know if it's 10 contestants or whatever, but everyone would sponsor a guy, you know?
Yep.
And the guy is not an NBA guy, but he's the guy that dunks. And like you see all these YouTuber dunking and all that stuff. and all that Instagram, these guys be dunking and jumping all over the place.
Yep.
Then you bring some excitement to the slam dunk situation because, you know, your NBA guys, you know, they truly seem like they don't want to participate in that stuff. And it used to be when you participated in it and you won it, like, or you finished second, or you win by hair or something, other opportunities would seem to come your way, like Gatorade opportunities and stuff. And I don't know if those opportunities are there anymore for the players. I don't even know if the players even want those opportunities no more because the financial structure has changed.
Yeah, yeah.
So now you get guys who's street guys, but guys who play street basketball that jumps and do all these crazy dunks, and then you can bring that to the masses through representation from the guys that's in the NBA.
What is Pooh Richardson up to these days? Are you raising kids? Are you a world traveler? What you been up to?
Well, my kids are grown. I spend now my time in an area called Palm Springs. If I don't know if you're familiar with Palm Springs.
Never been there, but know of it.
You know of it? Yeah. Well, you know, not recently, but kind of the kids through social media made it more popular is that Coachella Fest. I live literally about 15 minutes from Coachella.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's what's up.
I can actually hear the music when
I'm about to say you rocking out.
yeah. Well, I'm not really rocking out. I'm hearing them rock out, though. but anyway, so with that being said, I spend time here. I spend all my time here in Palm Springs. I just picked up a new game. I don't know if it's that nationally known yet, but I played a little golf, but I like the pickleball thing.
I thought you were about to say Wordle.
What's the name of it? Say again.
I thought you were about to talk about the Wordle, the word puzzle game that everybody's been freaking out about.
I don't even know that one. See, I'm on the late show. I'm on the late show, man. I'm on the late show.
But, yeah, pickleball is a big deal right now. It is.
Okay. So I've been playing some of that, learning to play that. I just started about a month ago. I've been going every day. I'm addicted to it. Because the weather stays nice here all the time, you can go out and you can play, you know, because the weather here, you know, now it's been a little chilly, but weather here probably on the average about 85, 80.
Yeah. All right.
Well, yeah. So that's what I've been doing. And I've been doing a lot of research with living out here, doing a lot of research because this is like more or less a retirement community. But living out here, I've been doing a lot of research with the natural CBD stuff, you know, all the aches and pains that a lot of the senior citizens has and want to still be active and have a active lifestyle. So I've been doing a lot of research with that and coming up with certain products that's not harmful for them that can kind of help them with their aches and pains and sleeping and all the other stuff. So I've been pretty busy.
That's awesome. All right, two final things for you, and then we'll let you go. How much have you seen the current Timberwolves team play the last couple of years? When was the last time that you were in Minnesota?
Well, I was in Minnesota the last time they brought me in from the pandemic. You know, since the pandemic hit, it was different. But I watched games, so I watched games, and I was so happy that they drafted Anthony Edwards. I mean, I was going crazy. Because I heard that they was thinking about not, and I was like, come on, man, you got to get that kid. You got to get that kid. You know, it'll work out. Trust me, it'll work out. Of course, Big Cat, you know, just been keeping up with him. D'Angelo, I was watching D'Angelo since he was a young guy playing for Each One Teach One, which was a Florida-based AAU team that was in the EYBL. So I had a chance to see him as a youngster. So I've been watching him and Pat Bev there. So I've been keeping my eye on him for sure.
All right. This is the final thing, and it's rapid fire questions for you. And just give me the first thing that comes to your mind just real quick when I ask you the question. I think that we've already got the answer for my first one was going to be, what hobby have you picked up in the pandemic? And it sounds like you've already answered that with pickleball.
Pickleball.
Yeah, okay, pickleball. Did you ever eat a Philly cheesesteak in your time in Minnesota? as in made here. Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. All right. You don't remember the place?
Not quite remember the place, but I did try it.
Okay. All right.
What wasn't the same? Sunny Hill was shipping them in for me.
Sunny Hill was shipping Philly cheesesteaks in for Philadelphia. All right. And the last question for you is, who was the best trash talker that you faced in the league?
Faced? Reggie Miller. No Reggie Miller faced Gary Payton.
Ooh, okay. Okay. Wow. Okay. All right. I hear you. Well, Pooh Bridgeson, man, it's been an honor. It's been a blast. Like I said before, man, you're legendary here. Our first draft pick ever, you know, the point guard out of UCLA in Philadelphia. I appreciate your time here on the Life in the Pack podcast.
Man, thanks for having me, man. Beautiful, man. I loved it. I loved it. Thanks for spending your time with me, man.
All right. Take care.
All right. Peace.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.